Hello and welcome to Deloitte's IFRS in Insurance podcast. IFRS comprises a new set of international accounting standards, and while they may not be felt right now, their impact will be very strong when they do go live. This podcast is the second episode of a series of podcasts focusing on IFRS in insurance. Episode 1 focused on the alignment of IFRS and Solvency II in insurance, and Episode 3 will focus on the IFRS impacts on external stakeholders and investor relations. In this podcast, we're going to focus on the operating model implications for IFRS in insurance. Now, in our first podcast, we used a metaphor that IFRS is a little like a swell. Away from the coast, you don't feel it too much, but when you get close to the shore, it leads to waves that can crash violently. Well, let's add to that. You could think of your operating model as a strong framework for your insurance organization or ship, ensuring that it can cope with the waves crashing on its bow. And with a strong structural framework, you can protect against future legislative and regulatory storms. To clarify, the operating model's primary purpose is to enable the application of strategy and change to business operations. Within the context of IFRS, the operating model articulates key components of the business and how they work together in support of the business strategy and change required to enable sustainable change. Now, a central feature of the operating model is its ability to communicate to internal and external stakeholders how the organization either currently works, that's the current operating model, or will work in the future, that's the target operating model, and to lay out precisely how and where the IFRS strategy will be executed from a process, people and culture, and systems and data perspective. This is crucial in understanding how the performance of the business can be aligned and managed. Now, the operating model approach can also focus on defining how the key enabling functions will most effectively deliver the strategy and change required for IFRS. Well, we're here with Kay Forsyth, Tim Clayton Ball, and Keith Stone, who are insurance partners here at Deloitte. Kay focuses on process and finance transformation. Tim's specialism is in people, organization, and cultural change. And Keith's focus is on the technology and data implications of finance transformation. Now, they're here to share their insights about how IFRS can provide a great opportunity to review your operating model, your organizational framework, and why IFRS may well be essential to realize synergies, opportunities, and to improve your organizational effectiveness and efficiency. Keith, what are the IFRS impacts from a process perspective?
Insurance now are trying to reduce costs, but you need to work out what process is done where, by whom. So you as the organization can have much more efficient process, and from a regulator, a much more effective process. I think the most important on a process perspective is the handoffs between the different people, because a process goes from a source system through to a group consolidation, but there might be 10, 20 people touching that data as it goes through. So how do you make this process more efficient and more effective? And you look at each individual process. Sometimes you need a center of excellence, so people do the same thing day in and day out. Other times you need, say, the actuaries involved, so you need highly paid people to touch this process. But if you don't look at every single process and the touch points, you won't have an efficient, effective, long-term solution. One important process that cuts across all this is the working day timetable, because it cuts across group divisions and it cuts across IFRS as well. So that'll have to be one of the processes which are important to consider.
Tim, what are the IFRS impacts from a people and culture perspective?
This goes back to fundamental culture of the organisation in terms of the governance frameworks and decision-making mechanisms. Certainly, from my experience recently, this is starting to impact not only from a training, development and resourcing perspective, but equally the HR function as well. In terms of HR's role as ambassadors for the whole cultural and behavioural agenda within the organisation. And I think this further reinforces the fact that actually it's not just about the numbers and how easier they are to translate. It goes to the core of the organisation in terms of how that organisation makes decisions and reaches the decisions that it needs to make from a financial perspective.
What are the additional IFRS impacts, the ones you consider from a systems perspective?
The technology part is a vast majority of the spend. You're going to probably spend 70%. You can't just replace the legacy systems overnight. In any big program, you need to have quick wins. The last thing you want to do is replace all your general ledgers. Say at 1B, you might have, say, 10 general ledgers. To replace general ledgers in a complete way would take you probably 2-3 years. So what you have to do is come up with some tactical solutions working to the long-term agenda. It might be putting a data warehouse. It might be putting a consolidation system, which is not at the group, but the BU. And over time, time you replace the general ledgers to get the consistency of data that you require.
Keith, related to the process and systems aspects, you mentioned data implications. So what do you think is important to consider with respect to data?
So when I think of IFRS, I think of the data and the data manipulation, the data consistency, the data standards, and how you're going to source the data from the source systems through to a consolidation at the group. And now we've done this already on Solvency II. However, it's not exactly the same data, and you have to manipulate. So the pipes you created through Solvency II have to be dug up slightly and manipulated. And that's the challenge of IFRS.
Tim, what are the challenges that insurers can expect, and what are the lessons we've learned from Solvency II?
I think we have to think of the fact that most of our clients are fatigued. Since circa 2005, they've been on this IFRS Solvency II change journey. A number of the clients that we talk to are thinking that this is something that can be done on the side of the desks, but actually they have to look at it from a broader perspective. Organisations will have spent an incredible amount of money on Solvency II. And the capability exists as the capability that's been built up in the organisation is significant. You know, my concerns around, do our client organisations have the capacity to deal with this wave of change?
Why is the operating model so important in this context?
This is a large programme, similar to Solvency II. But the challenge with this programme is that, unlike Solvency II, where it was a group-driven, group-controlled project, where a lot of the work done at the group and some of the work is done at the division or business unit. With IFRS, bulk of the work is done at the business unit. And a program this size, how do you control it and sponsor it when you haven't got the control from the group? A lot of insurance companies are decentralized, so it's going to be challenging to get the synergy, the control, the consistency across a vast program this size. The worst case scenario is when every business unit creates a different technology solution with a different technology provider, and you'll have a complete inconsistency, over budget, overrun, and you won't deliver what the regulator and the group people want. I think one of the lessons I learned from Solvency II is that big programs often go over budget.
So why should insurers focus on IFRS right now?
I think insurers, you know, the dates have slipped, so let me take my foot off the brake. And that is the last thing you should do. Because some people haven't even realised that IFRS 9 is coming before IFRS 4. So you're looking at the asset side before you look at the liability side. So you can't start IFRS 4 in 2 years' time and not start IFRS 9 because you're not going to be compliant. So to me, why don't you start working in a less aggressive way, but start now rather than in a year's time when it's going to be a bit frantic. Other regulators are going to come out there. There's other reporting solutions. The regulator, I'm sure, will change his mind on some other things, even on Solvency II. So to me, you shouldn't defer these programs just because the regulator defers it by a few years.
Absolutely.
With the continued uncertainty around implementation dates and the exact nature of the accounting rules change, people are saying, let's leave it. But actually, with the announcements in October, we're now looking at January 2017. So if you think of it from that perspective and then roll back, if you're an SEC registrant, you're going to need 2 years prior comparative figures. You need to put it into the planning cycle. We're already in a planning horizon where that work needs to start to be understood and the impact through the organisation.
Okay, what do you see as the next practical steps? What would you say to insurers?
The first thing that you would start to do is actually undertake some form of impact analysis. Mm. So to understand what is actually going to happen when the incoming regulation impacts your reported results. What does that tell you from strategy and governance down through the organisation? Because if we're looking at a world where the reported profits have changed, where profit recognition is shifting, perhaps deferring, that may have impact on what are the products that you want to sell. What channels is it appropriate to sell those products through? It may incite you into some form of disposal or merger. So there could be some very high-level strategic outcomes from this that will then ripple through the organisation go forward. And the sooner insurers start to think through that, they'll be on the front foot as regards some of their other competitors.
Keith, what would you say to insurers thinking about the next steps?
My opinion, just get the most out of these regulations, do it properly, and make it effective for the organisation. If I look at Solvency II again, some people complain about Pillar 3, but it's a great way of reporting your risk in a concise, precise way across the different aspects of risk to the regulator. It's not just the regulated benefits, it's the organisation that benefit as well.
In the third podcast, you will be talking about the external stakeholder, investor, and analyst community, but internally, again, we know that many organisations aren't even having these conversations with the board and with the executive. So if that's not happening, it won't be flowing through into other functional areas that need to be thinking about
this.
And that's an early and easy step that people could be taking now.
Well, this podcast was the second in a series of podcasts focusing on IFRS in insurance. We hope that it's helped you to understand the value of taking an operating model-based approach to IFRS within the insurance sector, articulating both what the target operating model needs to be and the implementation roadmap to get there provides a model aligned to realising the benefits that you seek to enhance stakeholder value. Episode 1 focused on the alignment of IFRS and Solvency II in insurance, and Episode 3 will examine IFRS impacts on external stakeholders and investor relations. You can contact Kay Forsyth, Tim Clayton Ball and Keith Stone, or visit deloitte.com/I2II for more insights into IFRS in insurance and for more information on the topics we've covered. Well, thanks for listening and goodbye for now.